Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film's spoiler cast on Wonder Woman 1984. Yay! Today, I'm joined by our deputy editor, Matt Matum.
Hello.
And our online editor, Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
So if you haven't seen Wonder Woman 1984, don't go any further.
Nothing good is born from lies. And greatness is not what you think.
Okay, so Wonder Woman, we've discussed it on the regular pod. We really liked it. Jack was not so warm on it. But what did we love about it? There's lots of Easter eggs. There's lots of things to discuss. What is corking about this film?
Oh, where to begin? Well, the thing that really springs to mind for this question is I loved Pedro Pascal in this film, and again, played a very different kind of character than I was expecting. He's obviously Max Lord, this businessman, and I didn't really know hugely what to expect from him. Like, when I actually interviewed Patty Jenkins ages ago now, like at the beginning of 2020, when the film was still supposed to be coming out in the summer and we could still meet people like in person, you know, she kind of talked about how in the comics, the character often is a character who can kind of get things going, has these kind of grand schemes that can help kind of move people into place and help plots move along. So I almost wondered, oh, is he going to be a bit of a just, you know, kind of almost generic character who's just there to sort of facilitate the plot? But he kind of has the biggest arc in the whole film, really. And, you know, his first scene was this kind of cheesy businessman selling his, you know, infomercials at the beginning. And then we kind of quite quickly learn that's actually all a front. He's, you know, pretty much, you know,
Ponzi scheme rat.
Yeah, and he's one step away from bankruptcy. Like, his biggest investors are sort of leaving him. Then he gets sort of the Dreamstone, more of which later. And obviously then his fortunes turn around. And then we kind of see him go kind of to super successful, crazy megalomaniac, you know, like world controlling bad guy. But then again, maybe this is me speaking too sort of personally again and just dealing with my own issues whilst watching movies, but I was actually really weirdly moved by the relationship between him and his son. Like, normally I find that kind of stuff, especially when it's like a technically a supporting character, you know, like a villain, I don't really buy into it, but I was just weirdly moved by all the kind of interactions with his son, you know. And like in the background, you just keep seeing this son get neglected, just how they come back together at the end. I was weirdly moved by all that.
Let's talk about the Dreamstone. It's obviously a sort of MacGuffin, but also the nucleus for the whole film. When you touch this stone and make a wish, it comes true. Max Lord uses that in a very crafty fashion by touching it and asking to become the stone so that he can actually grant wishes when he touches people and also take something from them. So there's this lesson that's being taught to all of us that, you know, be careful what you wish for, and that in getting everything you wish for, sometimes you lose something valuable. Obviously, this is how Steve Trevor comes back, because Diana, in the course of her moping around beautifully, I might say, beautifully sad, wherever she goes in the perfect pantsuit, touches the stone and wishes that Steve was back. And so lo and behold, he appears. Does that work for you in a sort of device to bring back Chris Pine? I mean, I bought it. I was totally into it. There was something of Ghost about it, wasn't there, as well, with this idea that he doesn't come back as himself. He comes back inside another man, but a man that she can recognize as Steve because he hands her a watch at a party. Is it working for you?
I mean, my first question is, what happened to that man?
Like, Where did he go?
Yeah. Is he in like the soul place, you know, up in heaven or something? I don't know. That was my biggest question going throughout this movie. Was like, I was just like, where is he? This makes no sense.
He's going to wake up, see his sheets are all soiled and think like, what's been going on here? He'll never know. He'll never know.
He had Wonder Woman in his apartment for that time.
She might go back to his after the ending of this movie.
Which we will also discuss.
That outrageous Christmas scene. But yeah, I mean, you know, they kept making the point about the monkey paw and how it takes something away. I think when it went to the really big ending and you've got Maxwell Lord kind of like floating in the air and looking like he's in like a Star Wars tube or something and connecting with everyone all over the place, and somehow that counts as touching them, I didn't understand how that worked.
Via the TV transmission, they explain this. Well, you're not listening.
The president makes says no it, sense. Jack, come on.
Makes absolutely no sense. Like, why wouldn't someone wish for it just to be over? You know, why wouldn't you just be like, oh.
Then something would be taken away from them and it would turn out it wasn't really over.
But it would be over. It's just they would be like dead or something. You know,
it would be over, but there would be like a nuclear apocalypse and it would be wiped out.
I mean, that was the section that seemed to go on a long time for me, with him sort of floating and bleeding from the eyes or whatever. And until Diana actually lassoed him and then spoke her truth. And that's something that I know, Jack, you were not keen on, but I loved her message of do something personally right, be personally responsible for a wider community, because that's the only way we can get through this. And if that's not a message for our times, what is?
I mean, obviously, I agree with the message. I'm not like everyone out for themselves. I'm very much, you know, love thy neighbor, whatever. But the fact that she was like looking down the camera, kind of like staring at you, just going like, you listen to me now, person, child. I felt like it was slightly patronizing, and that I think we would have all got the point anyway without having to do that. It put a slightly sour taste in my mouth because I felt like it was so like a lecture in a way. Because,
but what were you expecting from Wonder Woman? I mean, seriously, Diana Prince, Wonder Woman, this is her MO. Like, this is what she's going to tell you. She's like, be good, be truthful, have love in the world. That's her entire MO. What do you want, Jack?
I don't know. I get that. Okay. I completely understand. I think it was just done in a way that was so OTT, and you know, it's in keeping with the character, you're right, but maybe that's why I'm not the biggest fan of this movie or like the first Wonder Woman movies, because
you just don't like goodness or truth or love. I think we know what your little black heart looks like, don't we?
It's fine. I can take this all on, and that's fine.
Let's talk about the other aspect of the Dreamstone, which obviously you just talked about, Jack, the monkey paw aspect of it. It obviously diminishes Diana's powers. Didn't you love to see that? We got this amazing opening scene in the mall where she's just invincible. She's wonderful. She's winking at children. She's getting baddies and throwing them out of windows. And then to love someone and to have her wish is what makes her weaker, and suddenly she could die. I mean, that I found really terrifying and thrilling to see that she can get shot, she can get winded, she can be hurt. Didn't you like that aspect of it?
I really loved this aspect of it. I thought the, you know, taking away Diana's powers really added to it. And also it could have turned into a big, you know, punching match while they were in Egypt and doing all that stuff. You know, this really added something to it and added risk to it. And I really loved that. And I think this was enough of that point. You know, the point the whole film was making, this really worked. And then latterly, it stopped working when she kind of got her powers back. So I think it was just a really interesting way of adding something more to the Dreamstone and to her as a character, and seeing what she would be like and what she's willing to, you know, sacrifice for those powers and for the greater good of being able to save all these people.
So let's talk about that sacrifice. Diana does make a big one, doesn't she, Matt?
Yes, she does. Yep. That's probably, yeah, perhaps the most emotional moment of the film. Like, I mean, obviously with these superheroes, you can see them in all these kinds of physical challenges, and especially when she's at full strength, you know, there's virtually nothing she can't do. But this was something where obviously having to make this kind of decision, and especially the character who's so inherently good, but seeing her so sort of challenged by having to make a decision that's for the greater good, but of huge kind of, you know, negative repercussions for her, was powerful. I thought Gal really stepped up to the acting challenge as well for those kind of moments, especially because you sort of know it's coming in a way, you know, you kind of don't feel that there's going to be a totally happy ending, but you'd feel cheated if he was, you know, magicked back into being and just could hang around in the 80s or whatever.
I wanted him to stay.
But because they got that chemistry back, you've been enjoying them together. They've done it in a way that feels satisfying and feels fair. And with that whole element of the sacrifice, that made it feel like, because before seeing the film and when it was, you know, first announced he was back, there was a slightly cynical part of me thinking, come on, how are they doing this? They obviously want to recapture that chemistry and that thing that worked so well in the first film. But come on, you know, he did sacrifice himself then. So let's not just cheapen it. I was thinking, oh, how are they going to bring him back? So I thought this was a nice way to do it, that it kind of how it tied into her having to sacrifice, and her kind of biggest challenge really in the film was just having to make that decision, you know. And then kicking everyone's ass is pretty easy after that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's nice as well to see that she can be selfish and she can want something for her and not be just completely motivated by good, because otherwise she'd send him packing. If that's what it took, she'd do it immediately. But she actually wanted something for herself. And that, I think, again, helps balance out. I know that Jack doesn't love her all beautiful goodness, but it does balance it out that she is selfish at this point and is more human, not only in her strength but in her emotions. But that scene obviously made me cry. Oh, and also the way she left him, that they just had this wonderful kiss and she turned and she walked, and as she walked she ran, and as she ran she then took off and she flipping flew. I mean, did you like Wonders flying and lassoing the heavens?
That was something I was slightly unsure about, the flying aspect. You know, I let it fly, so to speak. But yeah, that was one bit I wasn't really, I wasn't as keen on that, just because, one, I just wasn't sure about her flying, you know, and two, I know they're just completely throwing out the continuity now, but she couldn't fly in Batman v Superman.
I mean, that was obviously my first thought as well, was, man, this really retcons Zack Snyder's movies. But I mean, I thought this was really cool. I really, really loved that scene between Gal and Chris. I mean, I didn't cry, but I did think that was like the high point of the movie. And then I think it should have wrapped up a lot sooner than when it did. That whole last bit, especially the like cheetah fight. I mean, we haven't spoken about Kristen.
We need to talk about Cheetah, of course, and Barbara Minerva. This is the other relationship in Wonder Woman's life. She's having this sort of girl romance with Barbara Minerva and enjoying friends for the first time. Let's talk about that. What was going on there? Good? Bad?
It was okay. I mean, I thought it was going to be a bit more. You know, I thought Kristen Wiig's character, she fancied Wonders. I thought they actually had quite good chemistry.
Oh, were you
as well.
Looking for a different film here?
I thought it might go slightly that way. You know, I definitely sensed an attraction there. I mean, obviously,
but Wonders would never cheat on Steve. She loves him.
I know, but
it wouldn't matter whether, you know, someone was standing right in front of her, just a girl saying that she loved her.
But I thought the rejection of that would perhaps be, you know, a bigger factor in turning her evil. There were some real callbacks to Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns.
Yes.
You know, the kind of dorky character who, you know, kind of turns a bit catty. It didn't work on the same level for me. I wanted it to go ultra camp, I think. You know, I wanted it to be kind of more like Catwoman in the older film, but it never quite delivered that for me. And I didn't particularly enjoy her relationship with Maxwell Lord either. It didn't really work for me. I was shipping her in Wonders, basically.
Just wanted that relationship to be... You just wanted that, I see. I think we're finding out a lot about Jack here. But I mean, really important to see that relationship, that women being friends, and also that sort of Instagram level of comparison that women do. Diana is perfect. She's wonderful. She's beautiful. She's well-dressed. She's strong. I want to be like her, but knowing nothing about that woman or her life or the things that she's going through or suffering, and that you really shouldn't compare yourself to anyone because you haven't walked a mile in their shoes. But also I really like the idea that Barbara Minerva brought this sort of focus on sexism into the part of the film, and the sort of 80s everyday sexism that was going on, still is going on, but to an extent that was so grim that everywhere Minerva walked, somebody would say, "Hey, sexy, where are you running to?" And then get angry if she didn't respond to them. And I think that was just brought a whole different level that I really wasn't expecting.
The scene after they have their kind of first date on the very scenic rooftop bar, and then Kristen Wiig's character is kind of harassed on the way home, and then Wonders comes and saves the day. That scene hits quite hard,
yeah.
I feel. It's quite...
Because it's not nice what's happening to her, or what might be about to.
Yeah, it's quite scary. And I think for me, the thought that there isn't, in real life, there's not always going to be a Wonder Woman around the corner to save the day is quite terrifying. And it's harder hitting than what you find in most superhero movies, I reckon.
Yes.
And the fact that she brought that to this, and that was part of this movie, was quite something.
I just really enjoyed her as a kind of one of those throwback villains. She was very funny and had a lot of fun with it. I perhaps wasn't entirely convinced, as most other people weren't, when it got to the CGI stage. Should we discuss that bit at the end?
The CG was pretty bobbins, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know what happened there, but it's a bit like, as Jack was saying, the CG in the first film, where it was just like so overdone. But I did love Wonder Woman getting the old gold suit on. I thought she looked amazing in that.
That was another thing for me that I had slightly mixed feelings on, in the sense that, yes, it looked cool, but it was hard to escape the feeling that it literally just looked cool. So they just engineered this suit. They bring in a brief mention of like, oh yeah, this has some
sort of historical artifact.
Yeah, in Themyscira. But it's basically like, right, we've set this up so you can have a cool new outfit to wear at the end. And
I'm not mad at that. You know, that is a cool outfit.
It was good, yeah.
I found that entire fight sequence, I think I said it in the non-spoiler podcast we did, but the fact that when she says, I want to be an apex predator, I really hate this line.
It just feels
so forced, and it doesn't...
But would you hate it if a male villain said it? What is it about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just a way of getting her into the cheetah form so you can have the CGI and stuff. It was so unnecessary to her character. Like, she was already badass. You know, the fight in the White House was really good. They could have just kept her as
that. She was wearing animal print at the White House.
Oh, yeah, but that doesn't mean she has to turn into an animal.
Would you prefer like she was like a mad cat lady who really loved cats, and so that was a better fix for understanding
with an army of cats
why she might turn into a cat kind of thing?
I don't think they should have turned her into a cat full stop.
She should have just been Barbara Minerva, kick-ass, in a pixie boot.
Yeah, and like nods to the comics with, you know, the prints on her clothes and stuff. That would have been enough for me. Like, I didn't need to see the cheetah transformation.
I didn't need to see her funny little cat legs.
Yeah.
With the backwards ankles.
The little paws.
I was very alarmed by the paws.
It's such a difficult thing, isn't it? Because you have to have some kind of climactic showdown. I don't know, like, it'd feel weird if they didn't have some sort of big fight at the end because of just what, you know, decades of these kinds of films have led us to expect. But I feel they could have perhaps found some kind of middle ground and maybe made her just a bit of like, I don't know, like facial prosthetics or something, and maybe like some sharper teeth, but not going down the full sort of CGI route. Because it just feels a bit weightless as well. I always find when you get like CGI figures like that fighting, it just feels a bit like you don't really believe they're there. There's not the same sort of heft to it. I'm glad it didn't end on that. And then you got the Max Lord bit afterwards. That felt like the true ending. This almost felt like a kind of...
There's another ending though. There's the Christmas ending.
Now we're talking spoilers quickly, just to finish on that bit. Did she stay as a cat at the end?
She got electrocuted and died, didn't she?
No, she didn't die. But then you saw
her at the end, didn't you? Yeah. You see her at the end and it looks like she hasn't returned to normal.
Because that's going to be awkward, isn't it? Trying to go back to the Smithsonian if you're a cat. You're not going to be able to do much with the microscopes if you've got paws. And I hope she brought a change of clothes to that place where they were. Because after that happens, she's going to have to borrow something, isn't she? Anyway,
maybe
let's talk about...
it turns into a cat suit.
A cat suit. Ba-dum-bum. Let's talk about the other ending, though. There is this Christmas ending that feels to me like it was a reshoot. Do we know if it was?
I don't know, no. But we discussed this afterwards, Jay, didn't we? That, yeah, it definitely feels like it's been added on for the Christmas release to me, like, because obviously it was initially intended as a summer film, then it was first going to come out in November, then it was going to come out in summer, bumped back a couple of times, now it's coming out in Christmas.
Because summer makes sense, because it is July when all this happens. They actually fly that jet through fireworks, which felt foolhardy to me. I'm not sure one should fly a combustible thing full of aviation fuel through fireworks, but it was very pretty. So yeah, that works for July. But obviously we've now got it in Christmas. So yeah, we've got this Christmas scene at the end with Diana meeting Steve, not Steve, in a Christmas market.
Well, Patty has said that there's a post-credit scene that was not shown to the press. Mm. That was filmed in additional photography. But she didn't say whether this scene was filmed in additional. So it could have been. It could have been kind of chucked on the end.
Did you like it? Was it a coda you were into?
No, not really.
I didn't mind it. For the Grinch over there.
I didn't mind it. It was fine. It just felt really weird it suddenly being Christmas when they had specifically pointed out it was July earlier in the movie. Like, it was like, oh, 6 months have passed. What's happened? Nothing.
But didn't you like the fact that Diana might actually go out with that guy? She might actually have a little bit of love in her life. Which would be weird. Be weird for him, because he'll be like, this has never happened to me before. And she's like, I know all the tricks. I know everything that you like, Sonny, which is no bad thing either.
I hope the post-credit scene is just them two going on a date. And then her being like, do you remember what happened this 4th of July?
And then him going, just being like, I realize I've lost a month of my life. I need to see someone.
I took that more as just that now her heart's kind of open to the idea rather than she's going to specifically get together with that guy, because I think that would be a bit weird. But.
So what you're saying is this is the ultimate like moving on movie. that relationship.
Yeah. Obviously, this is like 6 months later as well, but I think it would take way longer than 6 months to kind of resolve the sort of geopolitical nightmare that's going to need to be untangled after all those wishes have occurred and then been reversed. Like all those kind of land grabs in the Middle East and everything like that we saw, it's going to take a long time for everything to get back to normal, more than 6 months.
But as you say, this is an 80s styly movie, you know, that we're not considering reality of politics or geopolitics or anything like that. This is just pure wish fulfillment, really, on our part. It's like we've got the wishing stone. What would you want to see? You'd want to see this amazing, hopeful, wonderful film starring a wonderful woman.
I would also add that the fact that, don't they now know that like Wonder Woman is a person? You know,
this was a thing that I found I couldn't quite get my head around. Again, maybe I'm just being thick, but like at the beginning, well, that bit I was saying I really enjoyed where she was doing all that superheroics, just saving various people. And then you kind of hear like a news report or something that says like, could this be the mysterious person that's been sighted recently? But then I kind of found myself thinking like, well, what's she been doing for the other, like how many years is it? 70 years or something?
She's been hanging out on the Steve Trevor ranch, wherever that is, hasn't she? In a checky jacket.
Is it just that she's just got a bit lax and she's only now being spotted? Because I don't believe that she wouldn't be doing some kind of, you know, good deeds and things.
Well, no, but isn't it just that technology in the 80s is now such that she will be caught on CCTV, even though she takes those cameras out, that is in its infancy. And so that sort of thing is being caught. And as she progresses onward, I mean, by the time we get to her and now, she would be on everyone's camera phones and all over Twitter and TikTok and social, wouldn't she? I didn't have a problem with it.
It's a similar fight to what they do in The Old Guard with Charlize Theron, where she's like an immortal and, she, you know, they make a point of her nabbing someone's phone and deleting the photo that had her in the background. And it's like similar here. Again, continuity with the DC movies.
Yes.
Like, what's going on here? With her doing the lasso of truth on Maxwell and then telling the world to be true and give back their wishes or whatever. I don't think anyone would give back their wishes. I think a lot of people would just keep
their
wishes.
No, but surely if enough do, it's like the vaccine. If enough people give their wishes back, then maybe we've got a fighting chance.
There will definitely be someone out there who would have wished for, and I think you even hear it in the voice, like all the money in the world. Okay, that bank transfer is going to take a long time. And then
you're overthinking this.
But they're not going to give it back. If you wished for all the money in the world, you're an arsehole and you're not going to give that back. So that's an issue I have.
But I mean, never been subjected to the power of Wanda's beautiful voice telling you to just take personal responsibility. You don't know what you'd do in that situation. She has the power.
I'm just saying, I think someone out there might be able to resist it. Not me.
No, because you're good.
I'm a good person, apparently. Apparently not, according to this podcast. It's very revealing about me and Matthew, apparently. So, but it's a small issue. Small issue I have with the whole concept of everyone having their wishes granted.
I suppose I accepted it in this film. Obviously, I completely agree that it does require a huge suspension of disbelief, especially in comparison to a lot of like kind of quote unquote grittier sort of superhero films we perhaps see these days. But I think it was acceptable in this because there's something inherently kind of fantasy about the character and the fact that she's kind of, you know, daughter of a god, you know, things like that. There's this inherent fantasy element to it. I've always quite enjoyed those sort of monkey paw stories anyway, so I was just willing to be like, yeah, I'll accept this.
It's very much in the sort of tradition of Big or something, isn't it?
And logically it doesn't make any sense, of course, because everyone's wishes would contradict other people's, you know, and all that.
I would say that something like Indiana Jones, which, you know, we compared like the scenes in Egypt to like Indy. It does harken back to that, but it feels like much more low key in those films, you know, like in Raiders when they open the God box and all that. And
the Ark of the Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant, the God box, same thing. But then it's like a small group of people die. And like, you know, with the Holy Grail, it's, you know, one guy is going to live forever. It's very low key. And I think by opening up this movie to like the entire world and it being another thing that's going to leave the world, it's going to end and there's going to be a nuclear apocalypse and stuff. I think that was maybe what didn't work for me.
You wanted it smaller scale.
Yeah. And I think the movie could have lent itself to that as well, because it was very much about Diana and Steve and Barbara and Maxwell. And like, it gave a lot of time to the individuals. You know, it wasn't massively action-packed for a long while and it felt a lot smaller scale. And then to bring that back in the third half, it felt almost like we're a superhero movie, we need to do that. rather than just making it about like Washington or somewhere more specific. I think I've worked out my problem.
You've worked
with it
out.
Now. I've talked it out with you guys.
We've Thank talked you. It through. We've had our little therapy session. Okay, so let's talk about what we did like. Let's talk about the best thing in this film for you.
I think it's hard to beat the truck chase. It's just an excellent action set piece to throw in like that little douchey sort of name drop. But when I did the interviews for this ages ago, they showed a kind of sizzle reel of clips and that was sort of the centerpiece. And just seeing that on the big screen, I thought it was just such a kind of thrilling set piece. Obviously, completely harkens back to Indiana Jones, but that's no bad thing because that is one of the great ever set pieces. There's just something that just feels so fun about a hero jumping from like truck to truck.
But also like when she sort of skedaddles underneath it, it's very much like the whole bullwhip drag, isn't it? It's so obvious, the nod to it.
Yeah. But then also I did really like how they worked in the invisible jet as well, because I was wondering if they were going to do that ever. And I just thought they just found a really nice way to do it and kind of nod to that part of the character's heritage, you know, that we've kind of come to that kind of iconic thing we've come to expect. I just thought they found a fun way to get it in.
Yeah, and I also like she'd already tried it on a coffee cup and lost it. Doesn't know where that coffee cup is. It's invisible somewhere in her house. I love that little joke. What about you, Jack? What did you like?
I too really liked that chase. I thought it was really excellently done. And going back to something else we spoke about, I loved the scene between Wonders and Steve, you know, their parting scene. Their whole relationship was great. And obviously, when he's trying on all the different outfits, definite highlight there. It's just so much fun. Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint like an exact moment because I just love the Wonders and Steve relationship kind of going throughout the film. I mean, that was probably my highlight because I enjoy love. Apparently.
You enjoy love. It's not evident, but there we go. Apparently you do. Yeah, no, I agree. I think obviously the truck chase is the highlight. And I think for me, the thing that was really good about that was the fact that both Wonder Woman and Steve were willing to go as far as it needed to stop that truck. And both of them were fallible. He's obviously a human and he can only do as much as he can do in a taxi. And she is, you know, actually suffering the effects of this wish fulfillment. So that doesn't stop them. They're so right for each other because they're just going to keep on trucking, literally. Love it. But also, I think that opening sequence with the Olympic Games for the Amazons, just cracking, wasn't it? And just like these really strong, athletic women doing these amazing things like jumping through hoops and diving off huge cliffs and riding horses and pinging those darts just set the heart going for the very opening of the film. And I think it really set the tone as well. I loved that. And I love Connie Nelson and Robin Wright as these sort of matriarch figures. They could squash you like a bug, but they're just so full of knowledge. Loved it.
Matt, in your interviews, there were some quotes about the Amazonian spin-off that Patty's working on. And this opening sequence definitely got me very excited for that.
But now I'm wondering, God, when are we going to get anything more from Wonder Woman now that Patty's obviously going to be busy with
Star Wars
for a while, isn't she?
Well, she could give the reins over for a spin-off. Mm.
She did say she wasn't planning to probably direct the one herself.
I mean,
the Amazonian spin-off.
Obviously, like Wonder Woman 3, because it could happen in any time period.
What period would you like to see Wonder Woman now do?
Patty has said it would have to be the modern day, I think. She said if she did a third. Yeah, I'd like to see modern day or near future. Now we've done the 80s. I don't really want to see Wonder Woman in the 90s, to be honest.
Yeah, you'd be touching on very Captain Marvel territory there as well, because it would be like, you know, falling through a blockbuster or something. I mean, ideally, we'd go back in time. I mean, we've had a dream stone. I'm looking at a time stone now, and we could like send her back to like medieval times. That would be quite fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough that any future film really now can't have Steve in it.
He can't come back. You've had your wish, and the pain that comes with that, the loss that you get as an audience, is you don't get him in the future.
Who should play her love interest in the next film? I mean, you could probably cast another Chris. Get Chris Evans in there.
I like that idea. I think Gal and Chris together, the Evans, would be a very nice match. Okay, we'll send that note to Patty, shall we? And I'm sure she'd appreciate it. So on that note, we're going to close out this chat because we could go on for hours, but we're not going to. Do send us your thoughts about Wonder Woman 1984. But for now, we will say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye.